such sights to show you.
Ugh.
Do I need to slap you?
No, no, it's fine. Don't slap me, please. I need to. I don't want to do the podcast like in the indie fucking.
This is how we. This is the behind the scene footage. Right.
Do I slap you? I think we're okay. Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
Are we good?
Yeah,
we
let
good.
Me just get we're good. Yeah, we're good.
Okay, Jesus. You really need that goddamn water.
I was really thirsty. I told you, I sing show tunes on the way here.
Which one did you sing today?
Spring Awakening.
I don't know what that is.
Exactly. It's the one that has John Gallagher Jr. in it.
Oh.
From Hush.
From Hush, yeah. I knew the actor. I don't know. Yeah. Still, the show tune is lost to me.
I know. It's okay.
It's okay. Spring Awakening. Gotcha.
It's very sad. It's about German children. Not German.
all the German children.
No, it's like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's basically German children, like, growing up in, like, a super, super conservative environment where they're, like, not taught about, like, puberty, basically, and they fuck.
Oh, my God.
And one of them get, yeah, it's just basically, like, sins of the flesh and super conservative religious types. And
so it could be about German children or Missouri children.
Basically.
My grandmother lives in Missouri. I can attest to this.
My dad is from Missouri, so.
Yeah. And he left.
Exactly. But.
Shall we? Let's do it.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. And fresh out of New York City,
yay.
Anthony Fuentes, welcome back to the West Coast.
I'm still adjusting to the time. This is fucking horrible.
He literally hopped off the plane at LAX with, I don't know, jet lag and...
Yeah, definitely some of that.
Some dreams being crushed. I don't know.
No, it was a good... Well, finances being crushed for sure.
For
yeah.
sure.
Finances being crushed, but the dreams
financial,
are alive.
Financial dreams.
Yeah.
No, but you flew in Sunday night and was at your desk Monday morning.
Yeah, early Monday morning. Only half an hour later than I normally would get there.
You're a machine.
Maybe.
Testament to mankind.
Thank
you.
To
be certain.
To be fair, I slept for 9 hours today and it didn't do shit. I'm still all bad.
I think you need like a solid weekend of just like nothing.
Oh, that's not coming for like 3 weeks.
Disgusting. Well,
we'll see. We'll see.
It's going to be significantly longer because my birthday's in a month.
Oh, yay. That's right. In exactly a month from the recording of this podcast.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, from the release, it'll be less. So you
yeah,
guys
it'll
can
be less,
anticipate
so.
That.
Hell yeah.
But today.
So today.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
I don't have a good segue, but today, speaking of things, my birthday's coming up. I'm getting gifts, and what is the best kind of gift that you can get?
Something that you liked, but even better?
I don't know. A freaking Child's Play, or...
I was going with good, the sequel, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, a good guy doll, I don't know.
My brain's still shit, guys, I'm sorry.
I'm trying to hold this entire podcast together, because I'm perfectly fine.
Yeah, no, the pace at that, absolutely.
Today, we are doing our second sequel?
Yes, second sequel after
Our
Halloween 2.
Second sequel. We're talking about Child's Play 2. Very exciting.
Me too,
It came out in 1999.
1990.
1990, yes. I knew it was a
90. 99. Brian Chucky wasn't even up yet.
No, sorry. I was... Sorry, Jesus. I remember seeing it, and I was like, I need to put that in my brain for later, and I don't know why I added that second 9.
Zeros don't exist to you. You're like, I am a 1 to 9 kind of person.
No, 1990.
Yes.
Which I did remember thinking, this is a 1990 movie
this
while
is.
I was watching it. But our brief synopsis, while Andy's mother is admitted to a psychiatric hospital, the young boy is placed in foster care, and Chucky, determined to claim Andy's soul, is not far behind.
IMDb killed it with that one. I think
this
that's pretty easy.
This is pretty solid. Yeah. Although it's not very outwardly addressed that Andy's mom is in a psychiatric facility.
No, they don't. They really, really don't make a point to do it.
No, but. Because I did ask DJ this.
Oh.
Like, a couple times, and I was just like, where's Andy's mom?
Yeah, it's like hardly acknowledged. There's a whole thing about that, actually,
yeah.
Which we'll, of course, get into, because that's how our podcast is laid out.
Definitely. So, this film was directed by John Lafia, written by Don Mancini.
Mancini, yeah.
And it was starring Alex Vincent, reprising his role as Andy. Also starring Jenny Agutter.
All right, Jenny.
Garrett Graham, Christine Elise, and Grace Zabriskie.
None of these are movie star names except Christine Elise.
Christine Elise and Alex Vincent.
Yeah, yeah. They got the names you can put on billboards.
not all, are you saying Jenny Agutter is not?
Jenny A.
But, so first, to go through the whole, you know...
Our bits. What we do. So we're going to go get into... I thought this would be a nice treat for fans, actually. Because, of course, we are Child's Play fans here at the Horrible People's Podcast.
Definitely.
And there's a big, you know, the whole remake thing's happening now. But the reason why we have a remake and a companion TV show is we very briefly touched about this on our Child's Play 1 episode, which you should listen to. I think it's episode 11? 11, yes.
I believe so.
Episode 11. We only briefly go into like, oh, okay, yeah, the rights are split. But it's kind of a fucked up Fyre Festival level story as to why those rights are split.
I know, so, I don't know anything about this story, so Anthony is here to educate me, and I'm so excited because if you've seen anything about the Fyre Festival, it is an on-fire garbage can of an experience that I just personally had the immense amount of schadenfreude watching.
It's interesting seeing rich bullshitters get their comeuppance, which Hollywood. So let's go ahead. Let's get into why the rights are all fucked up, but how this movie started, which is a very, very interesting tale. So the first Child's Play film kind of became a horror staple overnight, and thus a sequel was greenlit immediately. But just as fast as it was greenlit, trouble started brewing behind the scenes. Not so much with Don Mancini's team. I mean, there was some kind of discrepancies as to whether he'd write it or not, but that's not the important part. The important part is what happened with their distributor, United Artists, which some of you guys have, you know, everybody knows about United Artists pretty much. They used to have theaters back in the day. No, oh, that was before your time. Fuck, I'm old. Okay. United Artists, though, they were kind of hot shit as a studio for a while.
I shook my head silently and sadly because I felt like I was missing something. But also, I'm very, very young in the grand scheme of things. That's true. So.
The film was set to begin shooting on October 15th of 1989 with the team from the first film mostly intact. Original producer David Kirshner, Don Mancini was set for the script, and this time Joe LaFia, who did some rewrites on the first film, was actually on board as the director. What do you call it? Don Mancini and the original director, Tom Holland, did not exactly have the best relationship. So Tom Holland went to go work on some episodes of Tales from the Crypt instead. You know, he did Fright Night and everything. So he still had, you know, he was doing okay.
And this is obviously Fright Night, Tom Holland. Yes. Not Spider-Man.
Not Spider-Man. He's just Holland. Like, you really fucked up my movie, man.
Also, Tom Holland, it wasn't even, like, Spider-Man Tom Holland wasn't even born yet.
No. He was still
he's like
more than half a decade away.
Well, yeah, because he's like my age. Yeah. So he definitely wasn't born yet.
Which, again, if you listen to the first episode, we will keep acknowledging this every time we mention Tom Holland. Not your guys' gay. But United Artists was now under new management, or attempting to be. A 40-year-old chairman by the name of Christopher Skase, who ran the Australian company Quintex. Quintex was looking to acquire United Artists, and one of his associates, David Evans, was set to be the chief executive of United Artists, and they both came together with a very, very specific mentality that horror was beneath them.
Quintex is a evil company name. Like,
it does. It sounds...
Quintex is definitely a 90s like adventure flick, and Quintex is like the evil corporation.
Oh, yeah.
That's like out to like kill all puppies or something.
No, these board members were jerking it when Reagan got elected. I'm telling you. These guys were like, deregulation. But it's Australian. But this company was actually built over like a few years' time. It became a global fucking company. So they were looking to get a movie studio under their belts. But they had this standard, quote unquote, that horror and exploitative film stuff with child death. To them, it was like, we can't even look at that.
So it was beneath them, or that it was just shitty?
It was beneath them. Oh. Yeah, they didn't. They were above this bullshit.
Okay.
In their eyes. But this actually blew everyone in Hollywood's minds. At least studio heads, and for good reason. It was insanely stupid. It was just dumb. Everybody who ran and worked in Hollywood was like, yeah, you need fucking horror, man. Like, that's, and you're United Artists, you don't have a big pool to work with. So Child's Play had actually not only made around $35 million in its initial run, so very, very profitable, but it was also, by this time, really huge on VHS and in video rental stores. Chucky had made a very, very big impact on horror within the year people had known it existed.
And what's wild about this is even as a child for me, years after,
mm-hmm.
Chucky was still like a staple at any Blockbuster that I went to.
Exactly.
Any time. And at that point, it wasn't just Child's Play. It was Child's Play 2. It was 3, mm-hmm. 4. Like, it was freaking Bride of Chucky. Like, all of it. Like,
exactly. You had a row. But yeah. I mean, but so the covers were always scary. Chucky had an iconic look. Like, people wanted to get freaked out, and there wasn't a lot of talking doll shit. So, you know, it was a good market. It was a good asset to have.
The talking doll genre is niche at best, but, like, it's... I don't know. It's a popular niche, but niche nonetheless.
Because I think the ones that really suck, they are literally just in trash bin. You're like, okay, no, we're not even watching that. Like, you have to be good to get it. But when you get it, you're making some goddamn money. Mm-hmm. but one anonymous top agent who declined to comment at the time of this for fear of his career summed it up best. Quote, "Since when has anyone in this business drawn a line that means not making money?" People were really like, Skase and Evans, you guys are fucking idiots. But, you know, Skase and Evans had actually drawn that line, meant not making money, for at least horror films. Skase had come from the financial world, having started out as a stockbroker, then a financial journalist, and eventually one of Australia's most powerful businessmen. He'd come from a world of wealth since birth, but Hollywood was a new venture, and it operated very differently than the Australian financial world.
Yeah, no shit.
I mean, again, this guy, I think he's like a spoiled fucking brat,
to be honest with you. That's like me suddenly deciding I want to venture into the Australian fashion industry.
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's a good, yes, exactly. You're like, what?
I work in American marketing. Like, that's completely different.
You guys don't all dress like Crocodile Dundee. Okay. black hats instead. How about that? So, he actually, he was 40, you know? He had this whole company. He'd come from wealth. He already had connections. He's one of those fucking guys. Socialite, basically. But when asked about this, producer Kirshner stated, quote, "I tried to explain that Universal built a foundation on horror movies. I told him that Robert Louis Stevenson wrote Kidnapped, then turned around and did Dr. Jekyll, the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But his case was that, like, horror is a part of Hollywood, and you guys have to accept it in order to be a part of Hollywood, because it will help you in the hard times." This had no effect on Skase and Evans. So,
especially Universal, like, you're thinking, like, the Universal, like, Hollywood.
Well,
like,
he was using that as an example. He was still United Artists.
I know, but, I mean, still, like, even thinking with, like, Universal.
Yeah.
Like, you think, like, the classic, like, Hollywood monsters, those are all Universal.
Exactly, and they transcend, like, continents. Yeah. People know this shit, but no, again, these guys, they were fucking little pinkies out when they drink in their fucking glasses. These guys think of the shit. Yeah.
They're like little Scrooge McDucks about fucking horror films.
There you go. Yeah, little bitch-ass Scrooge McDucks. There you go. But also at this time, R-rated sequels were all the rage. Mm-hmm. Like, films like Die Hard 2 and Predator 2 were in production, and they were ready to capitalize on the success of their late 80s counterparts. This is still prime sequel era. But United Artists didn't budge, and they really wanted this merger to go down. So they called Kirshner on a flight from Cincinnati to let him know that Child's Play 2 had indeed been canceled. He still intended to shoot the film independently. He just needed help putting that shit in theaters. He didn't have that because United Artists backed out. But now that the rights for the prospective Child's Play franchise wasn't a franchise yet, because you don't know how it's going to perform, but it was in the air. And a lot of studios were looking to take it off of United Artists' hands. And what does that usually result in? Motherfucking bidding war.
Hell yeah.
And it's interesting, too, because, I mean, the direction that United Artists went from here was like, okay, no, we're going to do family shit. So the next thing that was coming out while this was going on was a movie called Little Monsters that starred good old Fred Savage of the Wonder Years fame. That movie had like a $7 million budget, and it made less than $1 million. It made $793,000. Yeah,
could hear my eye roll, gentle viewers.
Yeah, you. For all the movies and shit we do, like, it's funny to see these suits be like, no, we're stubborn.
We know what the people want.
We know what they want, right? Who cares about that money? That's beneath us.
That's beneath us. We know what people want. This is true class here, little monsters. This will bring us millions of money.
Not even 1 million.
This will bring us millions.
Million, please? So when it came to the studios actually vying for this, it was Paramount, Warner Brothers, Columbia, 20th Century Fox, The Price Company, Carolco, I don't know, they're probably fucking dead now, New Line, and even Disney. They all tried their hand to get Chucky under their arsenal, but at the end of the day, it was Universal who actually got the rights for Child's Play 2, which is, again, why there's a split right now. But how did Universal get those rights to save Chucky? That was actually thanks to a little, you know, filmmaker that did a movie here and there. His name was Steven Spielberg.
you might be familiar with
Some of his work, at least, you know? Spielberg's request was simple. Just send a list of needs over to the studio, Universal, and Spielberg will vouch. He had just worked with Kirshner on a little movie called An American Tale, which, as they worked for Universal, it was the highest grossing animated film of all time up until that point. And that's what
I vaguely
Disney,
remember An American Tale.
It's it's like a Don Bluth, like old school kind of, like, not quite Disney, but they were pretty magical.
I know, I remember.
Yeah. It was
I said vaguely remember.
Vaguely. I mean, but you know what it is. Yes. But yeah, it was at that time the highest grossing animated film of all time.
And I didn't know Spielberg did that movie.
Yeah, he produced it. Mm. Yeah, so they had been working with Universal and they made a really profitable film. And Spielberg obviously had their eye, so he's just like, just send the list, I'll vouch for you, get it fucking done. But with this extra leverage, Kirshner sent his list of demands and was surprised to learn that nearly all of them were met. Like, it actually pulled through. So this was a blessing in disguise.
Imagine just, like, your buddy being like, hey, just tell me what you want and I'll make it happen. It's like that guy in prison who's just like, I'll get you what you want. You're like,
sorry, what do you want? Do you hang yourself? Do you want to, what's the method here? Because I got connections.
I got connections. Yeah. We got you. Just tell me what you want.
There you go. It's a good shiv. It's one of the good shivs. We'll take those fuckers out.
You'll go down with a fight.
Yeah. But Chucky now had a home. And it was at the original monster movie fucking studio. And it helped, that kind of resource helped solidify him as a genre fucking powerhouse. But you know who wasn't a fucking powerhouse? Was our boy Christopher Skase, David Evans, and the Quintex Corporation. As they could not keep up with their interest payments and had clearly overextended themselves with their whole financial empire. They had hotels, TV studios, they had all kinds of stuff. They had actually intended to buy United Artists for $1 billion, but would have actually far bigger problems than purchasing a movie studio in the very, very immediate time that Chucky was being sold off. So, Alex, tell us about this downfall right here.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, you're learning some shit.
So, Quintex backed out of the deal, leaving United Artists with even less content than what they had going into it. Their parent company, MGM, was in dire straits, as well as having recently had a mass exodus of executives and was desperately looking for a buyout.
Yeah.
So basically, Quintex came in, fucked all their shit up, and was just like, eh! Bye.
Oh, the old Romney.
Christopher Skase started moving money around through various foreign bank accounts and was having major issues with the board at Quintex. This sounds just like a bad movie.
Yeah.
At one point, even threatening to resign if he didn't get a raise.
He's still asking for more money and he fucked up a big deal.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This incident was reported to the Australian Securities Commission and the creditors began to move in on the corporation.
Yeah, there was a mole actually in the board meeting. And he was just like, fuck this. Yeah.
Because of Skase's foreign bank account activity, a lot of the money creditors were expecting for reimbursement went quote-unquote missing.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the $2.5 billion. $2.5 billion.
That's with a B, motherfuckers.
$1 billion in assets. Quintex was in some deep, deep, debt bullshit.
Yeah, they really overdid it.
Yeah.
Over fucking
Skase was forced to sell some of his assets at Quintex, and the company soon folded. He was $700 million in personal debt.
Yeah.
And was soon arrested for improperly using his position to obtain management fees.
He's trying to hustle more fucking people as fucking he's doing
bullshit.
This. Yeah, the gall on this piece of shit, dude.
Fucking bullshit. What's... When I say we need to eat rich people, this is what I mean.
Right, this motherfucker. But yeah, $700 million. Almost $1 billion in his own, like, you owe a lot of fucking people.
Yeah. And it's also, he's also just seems like the kind of guy who's just like, I pulled myself up by the bootstraps, excuse me.
My parents only had like 3 houses and 2 of them were vacation homes, man.
I got a small loan of $1 million.
Yeah. Oh, check this next one out.
He also had sold up to $900,000 worth of antique furniture in order to pay for some of his legal fees and debts. Oh, you poor man.
No, now he only owes like $699,100,000 to Australia.
Oh, no.
All the antique furniture, man. He's losing all the fucking footstools.
It gets worse.
Yep.
The clusterfuck continues.
Oh, absolutely.
After spending one night in jail, he was released and stupidly allowed to keep his passport.
Yeah.
Fucking lawyers, man.
Rich lawyers. Right? Yeah, not our fucking lawyers. I'll tell you that right now.
He promptly fled to Spain, where he spent the entirety of the 90s in exile. Mm-hmm. The Australian government attempted to extradite him many times, but he remained elusive. There was even an attempt at crowdfunding via...
It keeps getting crazier.
An Australian television personality. The fundraising was to buy a bounty hunter to bring him back and managed to raise $250,000.
$250,000.
$250,000.
That's some of his antique furniture right there.
Right, but like... It was crowdfunded.
Yeah.
So people decided to give their money.
Australians.
Australians gave up to $250,000 in their own money.
To cash this piece of shit.
To buy a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
To go get him and bring him back. But it was eventually called off because that's very illegal.
Yeah, no, due to legal advice. And it's funny because he kept saying like, I have a lung condition, whatever, I can't come back. And the tabloids would be like, dude, we have cameras. We're seeing you live a life out in Spain right now.
He's like smoking cigars and shit.
Oh yeah, keep going.
Skase continued to live in multi-million dollar mansions during his time in Spain, but as the 90s were coming to a close, the Australian government was getting closer and closer to having him extradited for his crimes.
We were almost there.
Almost there. During the extradition process, he managed to flee to Dominica. By 2001, the Australian government was in negotiations to bring him back home to pay for his crimes. But he had eventually succumbed to stomach cancer and died in August at the age of 52.
Yep.
So he never actually paid for what he had done.
No, he lived on credit until he fucking died.
He paid on credit and jumped from cushy island to cushy island.
Yes, where he can buy mansions with his fucking money he stole.
Yeah, until he died, probably high off his ass on, like, OxyContin.
Yeah. At 52. He maxed out. The thing about that, he was the studio head at 40.
And then by 52.
And it was done. The downward spiral was 12 years.
Oh my god.
Yeah, he was running for the finish line on that one.
That's wild.
Rich motherfuckers.
Anyway, don't be like that motherfucker.
Yeah, guys.
Don't be a fucking tool. Anyway, MGM, moving on.
Yeah. But it's interesting, like, okay, this happened to Chucky.
this all ties into why the Chucky franchise is
the clusterfuck it is right now. Yeah,
it's because of this tool.
One man.
Fuck you, man. Anyway, so MGM and United Artists canceled many films as a result of the fallout from Quintex, with United Artists releasing nothing for several years after the incident.
They released nothing.
nothing. Which for has years. To be even more of like a fucking killer, because dude. Not only did you take a hit, like basically with the mass exodus of people mm-hmm. like quitting and leaving because this douche canoe came in.
You try to take over. Hostile takeover.
Exactly. But then after that, you can't even recuperate because like everyone's recovering after the basically this guy being a fucking tornado just coming in, fucking up the place and leaving.
Yeah, and they got rid of like some profitable fucking assets. They had nothing. Yeah. They really couldn't build back. They had to do it from original stuff and they had nothing in the works.
The several years after the incident, they had no additional forms of revenue to like keep things fresh.
Yeah.
So that's awful.
Because one fucking guy.
And a hero comes along.
Yep.
United Artists was resurrected in 2006 thanks to Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise of all people.
But was still hard-pressed to find hits nonetheless.
Yeah.
The most notable films to come from this,
yeah.
I don't even, revival? Era,
yeah.
era were Valkyrie and Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yo, way to go. Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Although Hot Tub Time Machine did get a shout-out in Avengers Endgame, so...
Oh, it did, huh? That's right. Okay.
And I'm pretty sure Hot Tub Time Machine has actually, like, gotten a higher ranking since Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the United Artists executives are like, oh, fucking finally. One bone. One bone.
And it was thrown to them by Disney, which is now, like, the monopoly over everything ever.
In an attempt to explain some bullshit. Time travel. See, there you go.
But alas, after all the Hollywood bullshit that occurred in the early 90s, Child's Play was ready to test the franchise waters, and with the independent producing, there wasn't much in the way of oversight.
Yep, they got what they wanted.
Yeah. Kirshner and Mancini got to work on the movie they wanted to make, basically, which is great.
Yeah.
MGM, however, would retain the rights to the original Child's Play and all of its story elements. But Universal got Chucky.
Yes.
So that's where people get confused. So MGM has Child's Play 1.
They have Child's Play 1 and the story elements. And I think any elements. Drafts that came in there, because they're doing some stuff that,
yeah. you know,
that wasn't actually in 2, but it was part of the first script.
MGM is doing the remake.
Yep.
So, and which is why they get to retell the story.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And then, and that's why they also get, you know, that's why they have that story. But that's also why, I believe Brad Dourif isn't doing it.
Well, he could.
Because Brad Dourif has the option.
Yeah.
Thankfully, because he's the actor who's mm-hmm. just like the voice behind the face. So yeah. he can go wherever.
Exactly. And they just opted to be like, no, we're just going to do a whole different
I mean,
direction.
They got Mark Hamill. So yeah, absolutely. I'm not mad at it.
Same here. But Universal still gets to do Chucky stuff too. But exactly. they have their version yeah. of Chucky that they have now, which is the OG version.
Exactly. And this, my friends, is why the rights to Child's Play are all fucked up and why we're getting a remake and a chibi and
and a chia pet. Charles E. Ray chia pet.
In a true 90s
yeah
true reference.
Chucky's face. Jesus.
Chucky.
I clapped. That was a bad idea. That was good. I like that. That was fucking awesome.
But now back to Child's
back to Child's Play 2. Okay, yeah, so just as a treat to you guys all, if you want to know the deep stories of why this got all fucked up, one man spending too much goddamn money that wasn't his, and it bankrupted a legendary studio. But Child's Play had a fucking home now, and it was a home that was much more open to him. So now they actually had to bring Chucky back, though, and they had to make a film that could stand up to the first one. So one of the earliest drafts of Child's Play 2 actually took place during Christmas, which would explain why the factory actually created so many good guy dolls in the film they would be producing for, you know, a holiday rush. The factory sequence itself was actually in the original screenplay for the first Child's Play film, which is, again, likely why MGM is allowed to use this element in the remake. The teacher's death from the film was actually also in the original script, but it got cut and moved over to this one.
So is this just, like, gray area where technically, like, it's up for interpretation because it's for the second one, but mm-hmm. also for the first one, so they can use it in the remake. But...
Well, I mean, yeah, the context for how those scenes are executed are different mm-hmm. between both of them. So, yeah, and then Don Mancini's in his interviews, he's straight up just like, listen, if I have an idea for Chucky, scripts go through drafts. Sometimes I just pull one idea away because it didn't fit, and I'll just use it later on. Which he actually did for another example that's coming up. Right here, actually. So the original opening for Child's Play 2 was different. There was supposed to be a trial with Catherine Hicks reprising her role as Karen Barclay. That dealt with the fallout of the first film. But this scene was cut before they started shooting. So that would have actually explained what happened to the mom. Mm-hmm. And of course, actually, real quick aside, guys, if you're listening to this after the Child's Play 1 podcast, we fucked up and we kept referring to Catherine Hicks as Karen Barclay, her character.
Did we really?
Yeah, we did. We totally did.
Oh, no. 2Ks.
What are we supposed to do? All right, so sorry, y'all.
Also, it was episode 11.
11, right?
We've done 20 episodes since then.
Jesus, we've doubled the output. That's right.
So, forgive us. Right? My apologies.
But whatever.
Did you really?
We did.
Oh my fucking god.
For all the history.
I am so it's hilarious. Sorry. I know. Catherine Hicks.
And I like Catherine Hicks. But despite not appearing in the film, Hicks was on set constantly as she was married to Chucky doll operator Kevin Yeager.
And didn't they meet on set?
They met on set. They fell in love in the first film, as we stated in our previous podcast, and were married a year after that one.
Cute.
Yeah, so they had been married again by this point, you know, probably another year or so. So, yeah, they were still madly in love with each other, so she was on set to be with her husband. The character of Detective Mike Norris from the first film, originally played by Chris Sarandon, was set to return but was cut due to budget issues. So they still had to make a movie within, like, a conservative-ish budget. You know how it is, Hollywood. They still can't give him everything he wants.
You know, yeah. Hollywood.
Hollywood. At the same time that Mancini's script was being developed, though, a second version was being written by a guy named Mark Patrick Carducci, who had wrote the original Pumpkinhead and an episode of Tales from the Dark Side.
I thought Pumpkinhead was like a real campy movie, and then I actually watched it, and I'm like, oh no.
Oh, the first one's dark.
It's really dark.
Pumpkinhead 2 is camp as fuck, though. That's okay. A good one. I like Pumpkinhead 2 a lot because it's like, it does not take itself seriously. It's fucking awesome. But yeah, the studio originally didn't know if they wanted to keep working with Mancini because in Child's Play 1, a lot of his stuff was taken out. Because of Tom Holland and other people. So they weren't sure if it was his film, you know? But they gave him a chance, and his script was better. So he beat Pumpkinhead Dude and got the chance to guide the franchise from mm-hmm. here on out. Beth Grant was offered the role of Miss Kettlewell and enjoyed the script, but was very nervous about doing a horror film. She reached out to Dina Manoff, who played Maggie in the first film, to learn about her experience working with the franchise, and based on the conversation, she accepted the role. She said it felt like the way that Dina responded to her, she was like, oh, this is like a sign. Like, she's really about this, so I'm gonna do it.
Nice.
And of course, Beth Grant would go on to do films like Donnie Darko and like just always be like the teacher or very, very pain in the ass motherfucker.
I recognized her immediately and I was yes. like, oh God.
And she's like, that's the biggest star in this film. And she's in here for like 5 minutes.
And she gets murdered with a ruler? Question mark?
She gets beat the fuck out by a ruler, right?
That's yeah. rough.
Oh, it's hilarious. Mary Steenburgen and Karen Black were considered for the role of Grace Poole before Grace Zabriskie was cast, actually.
Is that the mom?
No, that's the foster person.
Oh, that would have been cool. Karen Black.
I know. Karen Black would have fucking killed it for the brief time. And she was in horror.
I know we just talked about Karen Black, but I'm still kind of obsessed with her.
She's
kind
of awesome. No, I agree. And for more on Karen Black,
listen to our Trilogy of Terror episode.
Right before this one. Right
Literally
before.
Literally last week. Hopefully yep. you've listened to it. Yeah. But if you're jumping, if you immediately jumped from Child's Play to Child's Play 2, check out Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fun.
Learn about why we want Karen Black to be this fucking minor character here.
it's a fun one.
Yeah. The foster home setting was actually David Kirshner's idea. So Kirshner himself has as much a guiding hand as Mancini does for a lot of the development of Child's Play. So they both kind of built the franchise to what it is.
That's cool.
Brad Dourif was actually not on set much as they decided to record his lines in advance in order to get Chucky's mouth movement just right. Alex Vincent had to play against recordings of his dialogue. Yeah.
You spelled Alex Vincent like you like
I did. I totally fucking did. You are corrupting my, and I know so many Alexes. Although we all call each other by last names because we're like Riverside dudes. That's just how you do it.
No, it's fine. I just noticed that I was reading ahead because I'm me.
That's why your fucking face was like.
No, in the outline, Anthony spelt Alex Vincent like how my name is spelt, which is A-L-I-X as yes. opposed to A-L-E-X because oh I God. Have to be different.
I wonder if I pissed off any Alexes by like referring to them with the I in there.
I'm sure.
And they're like, man, that's not my name.
No, I think it's very uncommon, and I think they'd be more confused than offended.
It just shows how much time we fucking spend together, honestly. but the Tommy doll was actually named after the original director, Tom Holland.
But, oh.
Yeah, this is not a good gesture of good faith, though. There were a lot of creative problems between Tom Holland and the team in the original film.
Maybe not so. Oh, yeah. More so. Oh.
Yeah, particularly Don Mancini. And Chucky's disposal of the Tommy doll was rumored to be a jab at the director because he beats the fuck out of this doll.
Because he smashes his fucking face in?
Yeah, and it gets all crumbled and concave. Yeah, that was a little bit of a slight to. Old Tom Holland.
Yikes.
The novelization of Child's Play 2 actually has a backstory that was not included in the film. In the novel, Chucky has an absent father and a very abusive mother.
As most serial killers do.
Of course, of course. His relationship with his mother is so obvious and so bad that classmates would actually tease him harshly and bully him over this. And classmates actually, in the novel, I didn't put this in here, but Charles Lee Ray was in a special ed class too. So he was getting bullied left and right. And this would actually prompt him to eventually strangle his mother. And yeah.
Okay.
This obviously not all in the film, but this is part of his backstory, which is very interesting.
So this is like canon, like
yeah.
established backstory.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, the novelization for Child's Play 2 was so popular that they decided to just do it again for the third one. They didn't know that they would, but people seem to love these Child's Play books, which I didn't even know they existed, to be honest, until I did this. It'd be fun to seek out. Yeah.
Did I mention that Brad Dourif was in an episode of Criminal Minds?
Yep, you mentioned that in the last one.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it was really hammered home.
Yeah, we went over his voice and everything.
Yeah, he's a creepy motherfucker.
Yeah, and he plays creepy so goddamn
I know,
well.
But his face is so creepy. But like that's why I wish I saw him actually act, because his voice is creepy, but like him acting, like he's a fantastic actor.
He is. He's actually a lot like Karen Black, and they use their whole fucking body.
Yeah.
They use their whole fucking body.
Like his eyes in particular. I'm just like, oh God.
Like Brad Dourif moving his arms. Like, watch that motherfucker.
Yeah, you don't know where he's going
next. But for the most part, the shoot was easy and the movie was finally made. Universal actually now got his chance to make Child's Play a fucking franchise, so they're gonna push.
The shoot had to have been easy with all the clusterfuckery that was, like...
Right before. Oh, yeah.
Like, the universe kind of just had to be, like, just have an easy shoot.
Here's
like,
your special effects. Here's everything. Yeah, it looked just behind the scenes. People were happy.
Yeah, people... No one was traumatized. Mm-mm. Alex Vincent was just like... This is old. I got this.
He's probably just like, it's been 2 years, man. When are we going to make this fucking movie? It's just like, well, fucking Skase over there. But now they got to release it, and they actually had to, again, turn it to a franchise. So how did they do this?
So, while the first film was pitched as more of a true horror film, Universal decided to emphasize the camp elements of Child's Play 2, giving the series a reputation of a comedy horror rather than just your straight shooting traditional horror, which I think, you know, definitely followed it through the rest of
it
the
did.
Franchise.
No, it totally did, absolutely.
Robert Englund introduced Chucky at the 1990 Horror Hall of Fame, where the doll showed up with a white tuxedo and blonde hair, berating the crowd in his bit for the event.
I saw this. He's kind of an asshole. It's kind of hilarious.
I want to watch this so bad.
It's just like a little podium, and then a Chucky literally in a white suit. And blonde hair, like, you know how actors, like, dye their hair for their role? It was, like, that's supposed to be his original hair. And he's just, like, moving all, like, janky and just talking shit left and right. It's hilarious.
I'm so proud of Chucky.
Right?
The advertising campaign was so good that it got Universal nominated for the Hollywood Reporter Key Art Award.
Yeah, so, like, it was literally, like, they wanted
they
this to...
They were on it.
Yeah, they're like, we paid for this shit. We need this to be, like, a franchise.
Oh, yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. I like to see support from the studio. Considering how many episodes we do where that doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah. Where the freaking, what's the word?
Marketing team? Executives?
No.
Assholes?
No. Company?
Studio?
Studio, thank you.
The words we just said?
Yeah, I know, that's why it just escaped me. Where the studio is just like, okay, we made this movie, off it goes. No, yeah. Like, literally, you get $2 for marketing, and right. That's it. Have
a
nice day.
Oh, it's a hit. Oh, fuck. We've loved it the whole time.
It made $12 million. That's amazing. Anyway, when it finally released on November 9th, 1990, it opened to number one with over $10 million, almost recuperating its entire budget.
Yeah.
Woo! It would go on to make around $35 million, giving Universal the hit it needed, and shame for United Artists.
Those poor fuckers, dude. In 1990?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Corporation Quintex died, like, I think 91, like early 91. So they were all, like... They got to see the success, and immediately the guys who fucked them, not even in the equation anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Critics were mixed at best, but mostly negative. Gene Siskel gave it 0 out of 4 stars. Our man, Roger Ebert, found it disgusting.
Yes.
Which I totally can see that from him.
I watched the At the Movies Siskel and Ebert actual segment on this one, and Siskel was fucking pissed, dude.
Really?
He hated it. He's just like, this is not even good.
Well, didn't they enjoy the first one?
Ebert did.
Yeah,
I'm not sure about Siskel.
Ebert, like, tolerated to kind of enjoyed it,
yeah,
right?
He gave it 3 stars.
Yeah.
So he actually did genuinely enjoy it. The thing is with this one, too, he actually, when he was talking to Siskel about it, he was like, this is a well-made movie. He literally has his argument. He's like, it's well-made. It got the effect it wanted. But I don't think that effect is good. I think the effect went too far. He's like, it's a really grotesque film. It's just the reason why it's so grotesque. And it makes it worse that it's well made.
But also, like, one of Roger Ebert's favorite movies of all time is, like, Minority Report. So
yeah, he's hard to gauge. He's really hard to gauge.
His film choices are very interesting,
they
to say
are.
The least.
But he's very good at defending him, which I think is the cool
if
part.
If you can, honestly... All movie choices and all movie preferences are valid, and, like, if you can make an argument for it...
All power to you.
Fucking
all
whatever.
All power to you, yep.
That's fine. Fans, however, they didn't agree and gave the film an A- on CinemaScore, something horror films almost never get.
They don't. They know, honestly, horror films get, like, C's and B's.
Yeah.
And a B is considered shit. You might as well be an F. And for CinemaScore, because it's Hollywood, they're just like, A? It's all A's, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They need that ego boost.
No, they're, you know, high-strung parents.
Yes.
Like, anything.
They are. Oh. And, dude, this shit getting A-, it's like the fucking Judd Nelson character from fucking Breakfast Club just being like, shit, get my fucking A's, Dad. And he's just like, cigarettes. Like, that's what happened with Child's Play 2.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. This film, actually, is Brad Dourif's favorite film in the franchise and a fan favorite all around. It's often ranked alongside past the first film, with Bride of Chucky often following.
Yes.
So it's normally Child's Play 2 and Bride of Chucky.
Exactly. I mean, it's mostly actually between Child's Play 2 and Child's Play 1 when it comes to ranking, because there's a lot of consistency between the films,
because
Mancini was in his fucking prime. But Bride of Chucky is almost always the third one also. But this, in terms of top dogs, Child's Play 2 is top dog in the goddamn franchise. It's up there. But,
well, yeah.
Yeah. And with
Is Bride of Chucky the third one?
It's fourth.
So there's a third one.
There's Child's Play 3. Yeah.
I thought there was a third one.
Mm-hmm. It was not as acclaimed. And when we do Child's Play 3 eventually, guys, that one we actually have more of a true crime backstory.
All right, because weren't there, like, murders
Yeah,
involved?
There's some murders that directly implicated Child's Play 3. But again, when we get to it, we'll get to it. Don't worry. This one, again, I wanted to give you the opportunity, since the remake's coming out, to learn why we have a remake. Because of one motherfucker.
Why we're getting a remake and a TV show at the same time.
I know, fucking
Since
insane.
Since we're in the discussion section, I do want to kick it off before we go into that. Why do you think they decided to do that? Like, are they just immediately just like, let's put each other, like, put, like, are they doing that just to basically piss each other off?
Well,
and put them in competition? Like, why do a TV show and a movie at the same time? Like, I feel like it's just, like, splitting the...
The thing is, it's two competing people, you're right, in that sense. I honestly think what happened is... the Brad Dourif, Don Mancini, Kirshner team, the ones who are doing the TV show, they have a really good relationship with Netflix. And they learned what streaming and what on-demand kind of entertainment can do for their property, because they had more freedom with Curse and Cult to make the kind of movies they wanted to make. So TV show was the next logical step. that's just how they wanted to continue the franchise. It's well, just MGM,
and
however.
That makes sense. With, like, binge culture and, like, how everyone, like, if you put a TV show, like, people like that shit.
I mean, sci-fi ended up getting the show, so I don't know how it's going to be put out. But MGM is a studio. So they're like, well, we have a property. We need to make money. Let's just make a pump out a movie and see how it goes. Now, they know the fans are rabid, so they have to make a good one. So hopefully they do.
So on top of that, we have an... So wait, so this is MGM with... So MGM is on the side of...
With the film.
Right, so for... Oh, MGM is the film.
Oh, the first film, yeah.
Okay.
Universal is the TV show.
Okay, so that's what I thought. So I thought Universal was behind, and but it's Universal with sci-fi?
Yeah, sci-fi got the right to distribute the show.
Oh.
Yeah, because studio can create the thing
right,
and push
right.
it out.
So
yeah.
Universal is, like, producing it?
Yes.
And then sci-fi is distributing.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yes. I was like, did I miss something else? Like, is there a third?
Because Universal also made the Netflix ones, but they were put out on Netflix. Mm. So, yeah, it's a Universal property that's getting licensed out to do this kind of stuff.
Right, yeah, and the only reason I know it was Universal because they often use... Child's Play stuff for Hollywood Horror Nights.
Yes, exactly.
For
because,
Hollywood Horror
Nights. Because Chucky's fucking known. Like, he is a mascot, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's underneath the original horror house with fucking Dracula and the Mummy and was the Creature from Black Lagoon? Like, all of them.
Oh, in the classic.
Yeah, the classic.
I didn't get to do that this year.
Oh, no? Oh, no, I'm not saying he's in the things, but I'm saying, like, the franchise is under that umbrella. Like, that's a big fucking deal.
I didn't see him around last year. I know he was there the year before, though.
No, yeah, that one is the one we went to. We actually talked about it in the last podcast also. So.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Episode 9.
Or 11.
I 11, that's right. I re-listened to it.
Okay. I haven't listened to it in a while, so I don't remember what we talked about.
I was like, I have to know. But, yeah, it's kind of funny because it's just weird. MGM, I don't know if it's a dick move or not. Like, it's hard to say. Because I do like Hamill, I like Aubrey Plaza. I want to see it succeed because I feel like Child's Play is a good movie franchise. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see another take. But yeah, the reason they're doing it, obviously, it's to make some money. And it's to get, but they have to be good because fans for this franchise are fucking rabid, man. They're rabid.
Yeah.
I'm one of them. Yeah, I will tell you right now. They fuck up. We'll let you know.
How excited are you?
I actually really want to see it.
For the movie. After seeing the trailer?
Yeah, I'm curious. I kind of want... Hamill? Once they got Hamill, I'm like, all right, fine. Fuck you. You guys...
I think my only concern is seeing Aubrey Plaza.
I know, as a mom. It's weird. It's fucking
very
weird.
Very strange.
I'm not sure about that either. But yeah, so as we're getting into discussion here, now that we went over this, what are your thoughts on Child's Play 2 as is?
Like, definitely.
How do you feel about this film?
I really liked it. I liked it more than I thought I was going to because I'm not a sequel person. I'm not a campy movie person. We've been over this.
Yes.
Literally every film that has any element of camp, I'm just like, I'm not a very big camp person. But it does end up growing on me.
Yeah. And it's not like hardcore levels of camp like the other ones.
No, this was like playfully like elements. There was like... A hint of camp. Like, it wasn't like, you know, someone, like, doused them in camp perfume. Like, it was like... it was like a brief spritz of camp, as opposed to, like, they took a bath in camp, like, juice that
They're
morning.
Just like, look at the bubbles.
No, I really liked it. I think it did a good job kind of picking up where Child's Play left off. I wish that I think we should have gotten that scene where it was just like
the courtroom.
It was just like, you're insane, see you in the loony bin.
Yeah.
Like,
gavel, get the fuck out of here.
Or something. Like, seeing Andy's mom, like, shocked, terrified face turning to look at Andy as she gets pulled away or something. You know, something like that.
I love how you have a desire for consistency and you do a horror podcast. That's the best.
I'm setting myself up for failure.
It's like a practice in masochism. It's just like, why? Why?
It's a practice in masochism and also an indication of why my past relationships have failed.
Doing the same thing and expecting different results. Jesus.
The definition of insanity.
Yes.
But no, I actually really liked the film. There were a lot of elements. I liked the foster daughter.
No, oh, she was such a cool character.
She was such a great character. I really liked her character.
She was badass.
She was great. She was the more enjoyable character of this film for me. Because
the foster parents were boring.
The dad was a douche.
Yeah. You like sushi, son? I like fucking... Like, he was just like... He did not get it.
He was a dick. Everyone there just like didn't believe him. I mean, obviously, like, they're adults. So, yeah. We're all like kind of conditioned to believe that children are always full of shit no matter what. It was frustrating because, like, obviously, as the viewer, you know it's true.
Yeah.
And you know it's real.
But, I mean, with this film, you're spending more time with Chucky than even the last one. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, that's also something that I did enjoy because you spend more time seeing, like, Chucky as Chucky mm-hmm. as opposed to, like, because, like, I mean, there's so much setup because you have to do a certain amount of setup for the first film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's so freeing about sequels is that you have that established backstory, so you don't have to worry about that as much.
Yeah, and if you already have, like, the first one is mostly plot and mystery based for, like, most of the film. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's like, okay, now we can see how Chucky does behind the scenes. So we're spending time with his personality, so we gotta flesh out this fucking personality. His personality is an asshole, mm-hmm. which is awesome. That's why the camp is there.
Exactly, and that's what I was gonna say, too, is that mm-hmm. that's what really lets the camp flavor, so to speak, to really be brought out, because you don't see that in the beginning. You just kind of see him being a menacing character,
mm-hmm.
versus in this, in the second one, you see him be menacing, but also just a dick, where he's just like, oh, you fucking bitch, like, you know, as opposed to, like, him being mean, but literally he just constantly is calling everyone a bitch.
Yeah, he's like, he's like talking shit.
Yeah, he's just constantly talking shit and, like, you know, threatening people. And then, you know, the scene with, like, the random toy executive where he's just like, he's just like, I'm not gonna kill you, and he's just like, now put your hands behind your back, and he's like, I'm just kidding, this is a toy gun, and then fucking just puts a bag over his head and fucking brutal. Smothers him.
Brutal. Ugh, fucking kill there.
Good shit.
They do up the violence for this one, I feel like, tremendously. Like, it is
significantly
graphic as shit, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Back to questions here. Do you like it better than the original? And or do you believe it is a better or worse movie than the original? How do you feel about this in comparison?
It's a loaded question.
Yeah. I mean, you got two options here. Do you like it more? And is it better? Which one?
That's the same question.
No, because you can like a movie more, but it's still not be as good as the last one on a tactical level or on, like, a film level.
Sure, okay. You're so filmy about everything.
I know.
yes, technically I like it better.
You like it more than the first one.
Yes, I think the first one's a technically better movie.
That's okay. That's kind of how I feel about this also. When I think about it. Although I am torn because I do like the first one a lot.
I do. I know. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy the film. Like, literally, if I had to rank it, and, like, Anthony can see me, you guys can't. Yeah. So sucks to suck. But, like, the movies are, like, right there. With, like, the second one is, like, right here. And then the second one is, like, just below it. Like, on how I would rank them.
No, I agree. It teeters.
Child's Play 2 is, like, right above it. And then Child's Play is just, like, right under it.
But yeah.
I think the only thing is I just enjoy Child's Play 2 more.
It's just, I feel like it hits you with the goods a lot of the time.
Also, I think Child's Play 2 was shorter.
It's the shortest movie in the franchise.
Yeah.
I think, 86 minutes.
Yeah. Right there with that.
Chucky fans are crazy, y'all.
it was significant. I think it was just as long as it needed to be.
Yes.
And I appreciated that. And you know how I feel about longest fuck horror movies.
No, precisely. This is not art house here. You know? This guy, he literally buried Tommy with a toy shovel. Like, this is the kind of movie you're getting with this kind of
thing. Yeah, and that's the campy little fun elements where it's just like you get that dumb shit mm-hmm. where, you know, and then also you get all of, like, the good guy stuff. The good guy sequence in the beginning where they're rebuilding Chucky, which is so funny. And then also it just... All of it, I think the biggest element of camp for me
mm-hmm.
was Chucky himself.
Yeah.
And then the factory.
Oh, the factory.
The
so
factory
good.
Is so, like, the design, it looks like a child's playground. Like, it looks like an early, like, I mean, obviously an early 90s, mm-hmm. like, child's playground. It looked like if I went to, like, Great America in, like, early 2000s, like, that would be, like, a place where kids could play.
Slides. They have slides.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, there's slides or something. Like, it's just, like, there's that campy, like, almost, like, neutral pastel tone to it that feels campy to me.
And it's interesting because in the Siskel and Ebert show, Gene Siskel only lamented the Roger Ebert once. He was just like, I wouldn't call this a well-made film, but that climax was well-made. I will say that.
I enjoy it. Yeah. I think it has campy elements, but I think it was very fun.
No, I agree. I mean, it knew what it was. This is, I think, the most confident Child's Play of all the Child's Plays.
That's the thing. And we talked about this earlier, right? Where it's just like, Universal knew exactly what it was doing. It was just like, okay, we're not gonna, we technically what you gave us was like a more, you know, shoot straight type of traditional quote unquote horror film, but we're gonna take this in a more campy direction. Yeah. And how they did that was very artfully done. And I think because they did that, it feels as the most cohesive of the rest.
It does.
After that, it kind of devolves.
Cohesive's a good word.
Yeah.
I like that. Cohesive is exactly how this feels. It's, I mean, there are, I feel like it might sag in the middle sometimes, but it's not like wasted time.
No.
It's just like, okay, set up now, more kills.
They
give you a kill every time it starts to lay down a little bit.
Like, definitely. Like, there are some lulls in the film, and like, but I was working.
Yeah. it's okay.
I was working while I was watching it, but also I was watching it with DJ, and this is DJ's favorite Child's Play, like, film. So anytime there was a lull, I could just hear DJ just like literally recite the movie to me while I was working. So it's great. I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. What about you? What about
oh, is it better than the original?
Yes.
It's hard to say.
Exactly.
I'm honest in the line also. There's something special about the original, which I think
I agree
in terms of being like a studio movie where people have all their hands and getting a well-made film made. First one has all those elements in there. Plus, Maggie's death is so Hitchcockian. The franchise never gets back to that point.
No.
It doesn't.
Oh, no.
But in terms of just pure Chucky, this is a Chucky movie. The most Chucky movie. So, well, depends how I'm feeling. But I think, honestly, this one might be number one. It might just, by a hair.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, they're like just barely had. See, but you bring up a great point and like a great distinction that I think a lot of people also, whether subconsciously or not, make a distinction. Child's Play 1 is Child's Play. After that, they're Chucky movies.
They're Chucky movies. Yep. Exactly.
Like,
They're
Chucky movies. Like, I'd because in growing up, I never knew the actual name of the franchise. It's Chucky 1.
It's Chucky,
It's Chucky 3. It's Bride of Chucky. It's Seed of Chucky. Like, whatever. It's like Chucky 2 or whatever the fuck you want to call it. They're Chucky movies, not Child's Play movies, versus the first one, which actually is called Child's Play.
Yeah, and it's its own movie, which is why I think there's potential for the remake, because they're going to have to make their own Child's Play movie, and they're going to have to distinguish it, but they have a lot of good stuff to work with, which I think is pretty cool. Now, when it comes to the actual camp, do you think this helped or hurt the franchise going forward from here on out?
Personally,
yeah.
I think in a lot of aspects, it helped.
Okay.
In some parts. Because there are a lot, because like a lot of, I think, the classic parts of the franchise and the parts that we get from the franchise, we get from camp.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, Bride of Chucky, her name.
Yeah, Tiffany.
I know, Tiffany. I was just thinking Jennifer Tilly.
Jennifer Tilly, yeah.
My wife. No, Jennifer Tilly, like, you know, her whole character.
Yeah, wouldn't exist with the camp.
Exactly, like her, and like how meta her whole story arc gets.
Yes.
Like, that wouldn't exist. Or Seed of Chucky, like, all of that's so fucking funny. Jesus. I think it's hysterical, but like, not because...
That was your first Chucky movie, I remember that.
Just because I think it's funny. Mm-hmm. I don't take it seriously, nor do I think it's really even a horror film.
It's not.
I just think
it's
funny.
I have to rewatch it, actually. But when we get to it, I'm waiting until we do it.
You know, I think, because like, the first one, I don't think it's campy, really. The first one, though, no, it's not campy at all.
It has a sarcastic edge sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's sarcastic, but, like, I'm sarcastic. I'm not campy.
But, like, like Chucky talks shit, but he's doing it in the character of Charles Lee Ray.
Yeah.
Like, it's
Charles
not, like...
Charles Lee Ray, like, the serial killer, not necessarily, like, you know, Chucky being Chucky.
Exactly, because that's a good distinction. First one, he's Charles Lee Ray. This one, he's fucking Chucky, dude.
Yeah.
He's Chucky as...
Well, and that's the thing, because in this movie, this is when he is... realizes his soul is stuck in the Chucky doll.
Yeah.
And then he embraces that shit.
And he loses, and he gets his ass kicked though a lot. Uh-huh. In that. It's a fucking Looney Tunes hilarious how they get him out, which I think is awesome.
Yeah. No, there's a lot. Like, you know, they stick, like, you know, like the plastic.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, there's a lot.
And he blows up all Akira style. Like, it's fucking awesome. So, a question here that I want to see if you found this distinction, which we actually talked about. You totally did. The film itself is visually much brighter than the first one, taking place in a more suburban atmosphere and having a much brighter palette overall compared to the deep Chicago crime noir kind of mode of the first one.
So dark.
Yeah.
So snowy.
How do you think this is a benefit to the film? Or do you think it could have been done differently? Like, how do you feel about that change in look between sequels?
I think it adds a lot to the campy feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my head, what I think of when I think of camp, I think of But I'm a Cheerleader, directed by Jamie Babbitt.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing, like the pastels and like the bright colors and like the, or like even like Edward Scissorhands, like the kind of overly produced suburban type of feel.
Oh, Edward Scissorhands is like Child's Play 1 and 2 in one movie.
But I'm thinking more of like the suburban type of look, you know? So that's what I kind of feel, for... that, I think, like, that's what adds that campy feel to it, and that's what I really like, and that's what was really visually kind of aesthetically pleasing to me.
It makes sense with the tone of the film, like, absolutely.
Even then, like, some of how, and I don't know if this was, like, the forced perspective of the film, but, like, some of the houses looked a little weird.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, inside of, like, the foster home where he was staying, and that, in the school... And, like, the foster, the foster home, but, like, the
factory?
The factory, definitely the factory. Yeah. But there was the foster home, and then the foster home. Like,
yeah. The foster institution?
Yes, I don't know. that place. Like, all of them had a very interesting, like, I don't know if it was the camera and forced perspective or a mix of the two, but it made everything look just a tad off.
Like a toy box kind of feel to it almost.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, exactly.
That's how I felt. I could have just been really tired when I watched it.
Well, the thing is, there's no grit.
Yeah.
There's no grit.
It's kind of whimsical.
It is a little whimsical. And I think actually when it comes to this, it's what makes the kills hit harder. The kills hit harder because you're killing somebody not in some, like, you know, like, dark situation where they're there's tension, whatever it is. Chucky's like... in a bright-ass classroom, beating the fuck out of a teacher. He just stabbed with, like, a flagpole with a ruler, and he's lit.
Again, like, how do you beat someone to death with a ruler?
Yeah.
It's a yardstick. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
A yardstick is significantly it's firmer. Harder.
Yeah. But or the kill with the executive in the car, like, the blood's bright.
Or like, in the very beginning, the toy tester, when he gets electrocuted.
Yeah, it's...
Like, that's whimsical. Like, I don't know how they managed to make it look whimsical, but his murder is whimsical.
And it's weird because, like, these bright colors, when how bloody it is, like, it's more gruesome. It's much more gruesome because that's not a lens you're used to when it comes to those kind of kills. They usually telegraph this shit, but with Child's Play, it's like, nope, here it is, full frame, and Chuck is going to get real creative with his kills, and you're going to love them. And I do. I do love most of them. So, okay. What are your thoughts on Christopher Skase and what he did to this fucking franchise?
I'm so angry because, like, I mean, I'm angry because he, like, obviously fucked over so many people. Like, how many people had to, like, lose their job at United, right?
At $2.5 billion assets, anybody that worked for the Quintex Corporation.
Quintex... Like,
people, families with jobs, dude.
Yeah, like, United Artists, like, Quintex, like, how many people, like, lost their job, lost their pensions, like, their 401ks,
believing this piece of shit,
Yeah, like, that's fucked. So, like, I don't want to say that, like, any, like, sure, like, because of his fuck up, we got the Universal Child's Play 2, and, like, that's great. But, like, is it worth, like, how many people, like, losing their way of life?
Exactly. No. Definitely not.
Obviously, from, like, a macro scale, like, obviously, fuck this guy.
Exactly.
Like, but also on, like, a micro scale.
This,
like,
is the best thing that could happen to him. Like, honestly, yeah.
This is, like, I mean, we got Child's Play 2.
We did. And then
eventually.
We got Mancini's consistent vision throughout the entire series. So even if it's hit and miss, it's consistent.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually pretty cool.
Well, okay, so what about your kill of the film? We talked a little bit about it, so I'm kind of curious.
Okay, actually, I was initially thinking the teacher, but in the factory scene, he hits somebody, right? And he puts him on the factory line, and then the eyeball thing comes down.
Oh, yeah.
That one I fucking love.
That's intense.
I don't know why, but, like, because they do a shot away, and the eyeballs are there, and he's just fucking dead. But I will actually say the most disturbing kill to me was the blood in the bag over the head with the executive. That one I can never look at. Like, I have a hard time looking at that
really?
Kill. I do. I don't know why. It just grosses me
the
fuck out.
I just
thought
it took too long.
Yeah, that's probably why. Like, I think that's why it makes it more disturbing for me. But that would be my kill of the film, like, in terms of most effective. Funniest kill is eyeballs. How about you?
Definitely eyeballs is the funniest for me. Most enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
I think guy getting electrocuted in the beginning. Like, yeah. I was just like, what the fuck?
Is this a Power Rangers movie?
does he get the ability to change the weather now? Like, what's happening? No, I think it set the tone for the rest of the film. Like, it was just... Because, like, also you get this, like, toy executive who's just, like, basically trying to cover up the scandal of Chucky.
Yeah.
Of the whole thing where they were just like, this whole thing happened with this, like, mom and son, and they were just like, the doll's trying to kill me, blah, blah, blah. And, like, that was, I think there was a whole lot of that in the beginning that, like, kind of we didn't get to address.
Yeah.
And just for it to kind of, that's just how they rung in the film, I think was a great way to kind of set the tone for just being like, oh, all bets are off. People are getting fucking murked. Like.
All bets are off is a good way of putting it. I agree. And it's kind of, I think it's interesting that they opened by the whole executive bullshit, considering what they went through.
Exactly. Well, and now that I know the backstory, I appreciate that scene a little bit more.
Dude, this whole film, I think script-wise, with the Tommy thing and everything, this is Don Mancini being, you know what, fuck all you, I'm making my goddamn movie because you gave me the freedom to do it, and I'm putting all the cards on the table for this one, all chips in, and that's why it succeeds. I think.
Yeah. We kind of talked about this earlier, but why do you think fans favor this and the original film so much more than the other sequels? Because you mentioned, you know, we're getting into Child's Play 3, and obviously Bride of Chucky is, like, a classic, but it's, like, it's definitely more in the horror comedy.
Oh, absolutely. It was when the turn fully happened. Yeah. I think, honestly, they are both top of their game compared to the other ones, because 3 tries to be, I think, the same thing as 1. Well, it tries to do this, but with the grounded kind of look of 1. And it doesn't do either as well as 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. And then Bride is its own thing. You have to love Bride of Chucky to, like, you know, in horror comedy to really love that movie. But if you don't, then the franchise moved past you.
Mm-hmm.
And then Seed is obviously very polarizing with the whole fan base.
With so many people.
Right?
It's just so funny.
It is. I know, but it is very polarizing. It's, like, right down the middle on that one. And the Netflix ones try to bring back the horror, but obviously they don't have the 80s grit and stuff like this. So it's these two are basically, I feel like, Don Mancini in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, the fact that they were given so much freedom with Child's Play 2 benefits them tremendously. And I don't think they had that level of freedom going forward because studios, when they start locking down from 3 on. Like, they have their standards. And you can definitely see it in the third one where there's a difference in quality there. But I think, honestly, just these two are top dogs just of how well made they are.
I agree. I think that for this, I mean, I haven't seen the third one.
Mm-hmm.
I can only base this off of, like, and then also, we're not even going into, like, there's the Cult of Chucky, and then there's the other one that's very similar, but not.
Yeah, Curse of Chucky.
Curse of Chucky, Cult of Chucky, like, all of these ones that were, like, straight to TV, like, in the 2010s, right?
Mm-hmm. Early, that's right. Yeah. It's been a few years since then.
Well, I think the Cult of Chucky came out in, like, 2016.
Mm-hmm. And then 2013 was Curse?
Yeah, like these are pretty recent. Yeah. And they're pretty great.
Yeah,
they're all things good considered. Ones. I like them. So I'm looking forward to when we actually get down the line.
I know.
And we have to sludge through some shit to get to them, but we will get there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do like 3, though. I have a soft spot for 3.
Really?
Well, because 3 takes place when Andy's a teenager.
Oh.
So I think that timeline is really cool. But it's a way less polished version of 1 and 2.
Well, like, I'm definitely interested in getting there. But no, I think that these two have a great, like, I don't know, I want to say that they're like the night and day of, like, the
extremes of the franchise, but they're the best
franchise. Of them. Yeah, it's the best of both worlds of the franchise, because you get the dark and the gritty, but you also get kind of the whimsical and campy, but neither of them are really sacrificing any of the plot for the sake of either.
Exactly, and Chucky's brutal in each in the way that people buy tickets for.
Yeah. Well, especially at the time frame, because, I mean, at the time that these were released, people were just like, give me more blood.
Give me more, yes, exactly. This is the only, like, 80s movie to, like, still be an 80s movie into the 90s.
This is like, you know, and there were some, like, there were some moments where I'm like, this is such a 1990 movie.
Oh, yeah.
This is, wow.
Yeah, it's fun. Even just from the palette, even. Like, it could have been a Boy Meets World episode in the same fucking set.
Well, that's where the camp ties in, because, like, the color palette for us, I mean, we might interpret it as campy, but, like, in the 90s, this might have not have been as interpreted as campy.
No, it did a
default.
Because
the color scheme was definitely 90s centric.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think it's very interesting us realizing in 2019, looking back, you know, almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Or 30, 20, yeah, 20?
1988. So 30. 30 years.
30 years.
Fucking A.
Yeah.
Damn.
30 years.
30 years.
Wow.
I know. So I actually want to ask you this question, since I kind of discussed it at the top of our discussion here. How do you feel about the remake and the TV show? Which one are you more excited for, and what do you think about them?
I haven't seen anything. Has there been anything about the TV show?
There hasn't been that much news, except that it's coming soon.
Okay, so I haven't seen anything about the TV show, so I want to reserve any opinions about the TV show.
But it is going to have Brad Dourif, Jennifer Tilly. It's going to be like 8 episodes.
Okay,
and it's yeah.
So, I mean, you know, definitely by
Don Mancini.
Bringing in, like, the original.
David Kirshner, too.
So, yeah, so, you know, we have Kirshner, we have Mancini, we have Dourif, you know, we have Tilly. Like, it's going to be
Chucky.
Yeah, so it's gonna be Chucky. We have all of the classic elements. I don't know if they're just going to try, because, I mean, was Mancini or Kirshner involved in Chucky 3?
I think they were, actually.
So
they were also, they were from Bright, everything.
So here's the thing, is, like, you have to also, you know, take into consideration, like, what are they working with? Like, what kind of headspace are they in?
Yeah.
So it could be a hit or a miss. I don't know. I'm interested to see any kind of previews or, you know.
Same here.
I would love to see some maybe promo materials. I don't know.
We're probably going to wait until Child's Play, the film, has its run.
I'm very excited for Child's Play, considering what I've seen. I adore Mark Hamill so much.
No, I agree. Me too. Especially his voice work. His voice work is always spot on.
His voice work is fantastic. Mark Hamill, another Criminal Minds reference, he was in Criminal Minds too.
Of course he was. Of course.
He played a season-long villain.
Really?
He was a season-long unsub.
He had an arc.
He had a whole character arc. He was my favorite character arc, because he was fucking weird.
Oh my god, this actually makes me want to watch Criminal Minds now, knowing that Mark Hamill had an arc.
Oh yeah, I think that's badass. Not until like season like 7, but he definitely had one.
That's fucking cool.
I'm really excited for the movie. I'm excited for the TV show, but I would like to see more content before I make any certain decisions.
Before the hype goes in. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
But I did see the trailer. I'm excited. I think that they made enough changes that it's a decent enough retelling. I think a lot of people who are, you know, just saying that it's too soon for a remake or whatever.
It's not.
This came out in, when did the first one come out?
31 years.
Yeah, it's been 31 years.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, they can do it. I understand, like, the franchise, but see, the thing is, we get the best of both worlds. We have the original team doing Chucky projects. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So
let it be. Let's see what happens.
Here's the thing. It's like, we're getting so much content. I think I can understand their criticisms for it being too soon.
Yeah.
Considering that we're still getting, like, Curse of Chucky, Cult of Chucky, but even those films are still from, like...
Yeah, like, what, 2-3 years ago?
Well, even, I know, but who are the teams that are, it's still like the Universal team that's working on this. So we're not, we're getting different content from different teams, and I think that's really cool, because, like, you're getting different interpretations of the story that everyone loves.
Yes.
So, and I think that's
a good, I like that. I like when that happens.
And I think that's, like, kind of what the takeaway that I think people should be getting from that,
mm-hmm.
is that how cool is that, and how often, if ever, do you get two different groups of people giving their interpretation on the same story?
Exactly, because even if one's bad, one other one might be good. Who the fuck knows?
And even if they're both bad, it's still a cool concept.
Exactly, and they tried, which I think is cool. I mean, if you have Aubrey Plaza on your team and Mark Hamill, you have to put a good movie behind
something.
Them.
There needs to be something.
It's something that draws that talent to that project, for sure.
So I think we are just about good here. Is there anything else you wanted to add other than if you haven't seen Child's Play 2, see it?
See it. Watch Child's Play 1. I would say watch Child's Play 1 before this one.
Definitely. This is not a movie that you can see without seeing Child's Play 1.
I mean, you can, but like literally Andy actually is kind of like a cornerstone of these
first
parts.
Yeah, well, that's
parts.
What I'm
so,
saying.
Yeah, you need to see his story.
You kind of need the backstory because they don't give you enough backstory. That's the one thing I will kind of nick them for, is I don't think they gave you enough backstory to watch 2 without seeing Child's Play.
Yeah.
But then again, it's a sequel, so you shouldn't have to.
There's 2 is in the fucking name. Exactly.
So, I mean, I totally get that. So, thank you for joining us. This was Child's Play 2 from 1990.
Yep.
Not 1999.
Not 99.
Directed by John Lafia. Let me see what else.
Next week.
We are going back into the 70s.
I know.
But it is a whole other ball game. We have a special treat to wrap up May for you. We have a request episode.
Much requested. Our most requested.
It's our most requested from you guys. The listeners, so thank you for that. We are very excited to bring it to you. It's gonna be a long one.
Yeah,
we've been giving you some short and sweet episodes. They've been fun, they've been hokey. This one's probably also gonna be pretty short, but next week is gonna be a doozy.
Yeah, next week we're going history heavy, but for a good reason, because this is a historical film.
We have history heavy, and then I'm coming in with the theory heavy.
Oh yeah, on a genre.
We are combining forces.
Yes.
Anthony and I are both writing this episode, which means there is going to be some shit to talk through.
And we haven't co-wrote since Scream. Think about that. And you guys actually made that the second most listened to episode of our whole series.
Yeah.
So just so you know,
the last time you listened to both of us write, it was in January.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're wrapping up May.
Damn.
So.
And again, this one, most requested by far. Like, so I'm really interested to see how people will react to it.
It's going to be fun. We're very excited for it. If you like what you heard, thank you so much. We appreciate all the love and support you guys have been giving us. I know we've kind of been out and about and, you know, loosey-goosey, whatever, because I know Anthony just getting back from vacation.
Yeah, out to New York City. I want those fucking bagels so
Welcome
bad.
Welcome back.
By the way, what's up, Caitlin? Thank you for listening and being nice to me out there and spending some time. Our New York friend that's out there.
If Caitlin's not in it, what's the point?
Yeah, I know, right? But we got to acknowledge I had a wonderful trip and she helped make it a little more wonderful. So thank you again.
Aw. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And we hope that we will catch you on the next episode.
Exactly.
If you like what you heard, please, 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 we do this entire operation completely for free. We put our own money, our own time into this. So if you like what you heard, please give us, or at least consider giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes.
It helps.
It helps. It keeps our spirits high, and it means the absolute world to us. You don't even know.
I mean, just that you listen every week makes us feel pretty good.
It does make us feel pretty good. But
I mean,
you
can add a little seasoning to it and maybe add a couple of stars.
This project is absolutely a labor of love. Like I said, Anthony and I dedicate so much time into this podcast and so much time into making sure every week we're bringing you quality content, and, you know, making sure our social media and everything is great content for you as well. This is pretty much a part-time job on top of our full-time jobs that we already do.
And some other part-time jobs.
So
LA.
We are constantly working to make sure that we bring you great content. So if you have the time and you have the ability to do so, giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes would mean the absolute world to us, so mm-hmm. we would appreciate that. If you are so inclined, you can also find us on social media. You can follow Anthony on Instagram at Hyrulean, on Instagram and Twitter at Hyrulean Hustler. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. And then you can find the podcast on Twitter at Horror People Pod. And you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is Horrorble People's Podcast.
Yep, that's how you're getting really good at that. All right. And then other than that, thank you for listening, Horror Bees.
Yeah.
I think we're good.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Peace out, you motherfuckers.
Bye, guys.